We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Time to talk baseball and everything sports. It's Live with Mike. Sponsored by Goodwill. Give hope. Give local. Give Goodwill.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Live with Mike. We're here at the ballpark, along with Mike Shannon. I'm Mike Claiborne. Our special guest, one of our favorite people, Ron Coomer of the Chicago Cub broadcasting.
Said that last time we had the guy on.
You know, I think you're right. But he's a favorite,
Hey,
too.
He's talking nice about me.
Yeah, he's
quiet
a favorite, too.
For a second. Let
we don't see him enough. Although, I think I see you more in the last week than I have in a whole season.
Isn't that the truth? It seems like we just continued the
series from Chicago, right? And, you know, one of the things about that series I thought that the Cardinals had a chance to win all of those games.
Every game.
But they were all entertaining from one standpoint or another because we were really good for the first five innings of every game we played.
Yeah.
After that, things kind of went downhill.
Yeah, but, you know, you guys know that this series is different than any other series we both play. It's especially now that the Cubs are a good ball club. For years, you know, the Cubs had their struggles and you guys were dominating the Central Division. And now the Cubs have turned things around, and they're a good ball club, and it just makes for good baseball. I mean, we play each other so dang much. We're, you know, it seems like we're a driver nine iron from you guys away, and, you know, I just think it's fun. The fans got to love it. I think the players love playing in these games. I know our manager, Joe Maddon, loves this series. Just you were talking to him today, Mike, and I was. He loves this series, and if you're a fan, who wouldn't, right?
Yeah.
He was a big Stan Musial fan.
Huge Cardinal guy, yeah.
And before he got the job here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you what, he has done such a good job for you guys. It's phenomenal. I mean, that was a great signing. I don't know whose idea it was to sign Joe, but it's been really good for you guys, in my mind anyway.
No, absolutely.
Let me ask you, you're a Chicago guy, born and raised there. Yep. You play there. You now broadcast there. We were talking about this earlier, following Ron Santo into the booth, a guy you probably watched as a kid.
Absolutely.
How much fun are you having these days?
Oh, it couldn't get better, right? I mean, for me, I don't think anybody replaces a Ron Santo. Mm-hmm. Shaney, these are guys that, you know, have been in these towns that are legends in the town, right? And as a baseball kid growing up in Chicago, I watched Ronnie play. And then when I became a Cub, I'll never forget the first flight we took. He, you know, we're a veteran team, and I'm 35 years old, and Ronnie comes to the back of the plane. And now we had a team meal set up. We were all going, there were like 20 of us going out for dinner. And Santo comes to the back of the plane, and he wanted to meet the third baseman, and that was me. And he goes, "Hey, big boy, we're going to dinner tonight." And now the whole back of the plane's looking at me like, "You're going with us." And I said, "You guys tell Santo I'm going out. I'm not going with him." I go, "You guys are out. I'm with Santo." And we went out to dinner. And that's the way it was. Ronnie was he was a great player, obviously, legendary in our town, you know, like Mike. And it's, there's a respect factor, too, that you just, you know, you love our game and you love some of these guys that have kind of paved the way for us. And for me now, I'm in Chicago, my hometown, where I grew up going to Wrigley Field as a kid. How much more fun can you have than that?
I used to have so much fun because, you know, the broadcast booth in Chicago is right next. And every time the Cubs would make a bad play, I'd look over and Ronnie'd have his head down going, "Oh, man." I mean, I used to have so much fun watching
You didn't
him.
Laugh at him at all, did you?
No, all the time. Because, you know, we had some knockdown battles with them, even when they weren't winning, okay? And
right.
Of course, and then in 60, I don't know, one of those 60 years, and, you know, they were, well, I'll tell you what it was. It was 69.
69 was their year there at the club.
And, yeah, and then the Mets came and beat
them.
Because they had Seaver and
Matt Lack and Guzman. Yeah, right.
You know, and they got him at the end, but
Nolan Ryan didn't make the rotation. He was in the pen.
Well,
how about
that's
that?
Comforting, isn't it? Yeah.
You have to tell me, I batted off him when he was with the Mets, and he was, he was 18 years old and throwing 2,000 miles an hour and didn't know where it was going. You know?
Comforting at that, right?
You know, we faced him. He started a game against us, and he struck out 12 or 13 in five innings. But you know, he was young, and
yeah.
And then the fastball was about a yard short, and we just smoked him after that.
So, Mike, you see now all these young power arms that come into the game. When you see all this, and then you reflect back to a Nolan Ryan, where do they? Is there a balance? You know, because I look at Nolan Ryan, and you look at the fastball and tapes, and the ball just explodes out of his hand. And that had to be a 100-plus mile-an-hour fastball, right?
They didn't have guns back there.
Right.
But, you know. And you can't compare one era to another one, okay? But when you went into a town, okay, I mean, it was – you faced three guys that could throw as hard as anybody, okay?
Right.
And then when you went to the West Coast, we were the first team ever to go to the West Coast and win all seven games. You'd face three Hall of Famers in Los Angeles, and then you'd go up and you'd face two Hall of Famers in San Francisco, and the other guy, Billy Pierce, was 18-0 or 18-1 in Candlestick, okay? So, I mean, you could actually go over the West Coast. I mean, you talk about bearing down, man.
I know for a fact all the years that I played, it's got a lid on.
Thank goodness.
All the years that I played.
You like my reaction?
That's the only one.
I never swept the series on the West Coast, not even a series, much less the whole trip.
We were the only team at
still
that time.
Today that can probably say that they never, the organization's never done it.
Right.
I mean, that was, if you were in a slump, you were guaranteed you were going to have a bigger slump by the time you got back.
Life's getting worse in L.A.
Dusty Baker tells us a great story.
He
said, you know, they're packing, and Aaron says to him, he said, how many bats are you taking? And Dusty said, six. He says, you better get six more. Hey, we're going to the West Coast.
He came back with one.
Yeah, if you're lucky. Yeah.
I'll tell you, when the first baseman for the Braves,
he
walked over 100 times in front of Henry Aaron. I said, something's wrong, and that can't be right, okay? So I went to him. I said, tell me your philosophy on hitting. He said, well, I have a railroad track. He said, if the ball's on that railroad track, I swing. If it's not, I don't. That's why I walked over 100 times. Those pitchers couldn't get it in his railroad track.
You were a pretty good hitter.
Mm-hmm.
What was your mechanism? How did you get yourself started? What did you not want to do?
I was a start in the middle, hands up, real conventional hitter. Mm-hmm. And then I would go to a load, right? To load to that 70-80% to the backside, which is a very traditional way of hitting. You know, I learned from Carlton Fisk. He's the one that taught me how to hit, and very conventional. And to me, my biggest issue as a hitter, if I could keep my head pretty still, I was good. My issue would be is going forward and getting too much movement going towards the pitcher, and your head start moving. And I think that's for a lot of guys years ago that hit in that style. If you could stay still and not have movement with your head, you could hit. As soon as you got moving, then you could really get pitched to.
Ron Coomer is our guest. We're at the ballpark. We'll be back with more on the Cardinals Radio Network.
Now, back to Live with Mike, sponsored by Goodwill. Give hope, give local, give Goodwill.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here at the ballpark. Ron Coomer is with us, along with Mike Shannon. I'm Mike Claiborne. We ask this question of our guests all the time we play the game. A, who took care of you when you first broke in?
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, it was real simple. The White Sox had made a trade while I was finishing high school, and they traded for a Hall of Fame catcher, Carlton Fisk, and he moved into the southwest suburbs, not far from what was then Comiskey Park, you know, about 20 minutes away, and his kids went to our high school. Well, I went away to college and came back and was drafted and signed and played my first year of rookie ball, and Pudge was in our town, and I just asked to meet with him one day. I hit 350-something and led the league in hitting, but I hit one home run with the new wood bat, and I needed to learn how to hit. We met one day, and we started talking hitting. We never picked up a bat. We talked for 3 hours, and then we hit every other day through that winter and for 8 straight winters. And Pudge was the guy that taught me first the mechanics of hitting. Then it was how to play our game. Then when I got to the big leagues, how to be a big league ball player and be a guy that could stay in the league. And, you know, there are a lot of people that have helped me, but when you get around certain people that really know our game, you're privileged. I was very lucky to have that ability to be around him as a minor league player. And, you know, the coolest thing was the 99 All-Star game we were talking about earlier. it was in Fenway Park, and he was our team captain for the American League. So it kind of went full circle, as you might say, but it was really fun.
He looked at you and said, I don't know if you were ever going to be this good of a player, but here you are.
There's my guy there right there playing exactly. third base. Yeah, it was good.
That's got to be fun for you. All right, the other question is, who did you own and what pitcher owned you?
Well, I wasn't alone in people getting owned by Pedro Martinez. We had to face that damn guy. So spring training, we're both in Fort Myers. TK one time started me 4 games in spring training against Pedro. The 4th game, now I hadn't gotten a hit. I hadn't hit the ball out of the infield grass against him in 2 years. So now I'm like, finally, the 4th game of spring, I see the lineup as I walk in, you know, I'm ballpark, and I walk into TK's office, and I go, Tom, I go, do you just not want me to do well this year? He goes, you know, he's got the half cigar sticking out, jersey guy, what are you talking about? I go, this is the 4th game I'm playing against Pedro. I go, I haven't hit a ball. I got a better shot of hitting it with my thumb than I do the barrel against this guy. And so Pedro absolutely owned me that day. He goes, just get your butt out to third base, and that's what you're going to play. And I did. And then the one guy that I did okay against and put the ball in play, first big league home run, Randy Johnson. Randy Johnson threw a lot of fastballs up, and I knew that was coming, and occasionally flipping a slider, and, you know, I was able to put the barrel of the bat against Randy and did okay against Johnson.
I was going to ask you, Michael, about being in that situation in the minors on spring training. Be careful for what you wish for.
Oh, yeah.
Situation like that.
Well, I faced Koufax, so I eliminated his curveball.
Okay.
And even with 2 strikes, if he threw it, I just tried to, you know, let it hit my bat. So I looked for his fastball high and outside.
Right.
And he didn't pay attention to a guy like me.
Yeah.
So anyway, he hit my bat in L.A., and I beat him 2-1 in the 8th inning with a 2-run homer. So the next time I faced him, it was a fastball inside. So I stepped out in Roseboro's catch. I said, hey, Rosie, I said, we got a new game here. He said, yeah, Mike. He said, I think you upset the big guy.
Yeah. He's paying attention to you now, brother.
That's what I got his attention.
You
and
got
I,
his attention.
I didn't want to do that, really. But he started paying attention after that.
You know, it's funny you say that. And I'm sure Randy Johnson started thinking about you today. Because one thing I've learned about baseball players, they have incredible memories.
Mm-hmm.
And pitchers have the best memories about what they – when somebody hurt them, they remember the pitch, the count, the whole 9 yards.
Yeah, that happened to me. I forgot about beating a guy, and we didn't face him for like 2 months. Mm-hmm. That's the last time I forgot about it.
Yeah. You're in the box with a little different
–
a little different thoughts going on.
Especially when that
so
first
bad.
One buzzes the towel.
Yeah, that'll get your attention in a hurry. I know Johnson will never forget it. He had a no-hitter going in Wrigley Field in the 7th, and he threw me a fastball inside, and I whistled one at the left fielder, base hit, broke up his no-hitter. You know, he was.
Did he
one
speak
of those
to
guys.
You after that?
He still hadn't spoke to me. That's okay.
You know,
he's a pitcher. Right? He don't need to talk.
He's an interesting guy. He came to me one time and he said, "Hey, Mike, I need to talk to Bob Gibson. Can you set that up?" And I started thinking. I said, "Well, where was he going to go? A guy like him, you know, he'd already reached the pinnacle.
Right.
Okay, so he needed somebody to talk to him.
Yeah.
Who was he going to talk to in the league? He was already leading the league in everything: wins, strikeouts, everything, and." But it's guys like that that they get to the top and they still want to look for some more.
So let me ask you a question, Mike, that I get to sit here. What's it like playing with a guy that dominates the game like Bob Gibson did in his era? In the 1 year, I mean, it was unhittable.
Well, I'll tell you, a few years back, one of the players asked me, said, what's the difference in your teams and our team? I said, Gibson. Plain and simple.
There you go.
Because we only had to win 4 games, you know. Now... Yeah. It's much, much more difficult to win because you got to win. You know, we only had 8 teams in each league, and you win the National League, you'd go and play the American League in the World Series. But now, you know, you've got all those series to play and all those games to win. What do you got to win, like 13 games or something? And so it's more difficult to win now than it was back then. I don't think the competition is great.
Right.
But, you know, which is naturally you got 30 teams instead of 16, you know. And, you know, how many guys did Ernie Banks keep in the minor leagues and how many guys did Musial keep in the minor leagues and never could play because of, you know, a guy like Banks or Musial. And, you know, even when the Cubs weren't good as they are now, they still had Ron Santo, they had Ernie Banks, they had Billy Williams.
Right.
I mean, Fergie. They had some Hall of Fame ball players.
You mentioned Billy Williams. Billy Williams was one of the few guys that hit Bob reasonably well.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If you ask Bob about it, he'll probably tell you how he really feels about it.
Right,
you and Billy Williams. Billy Williams first and you for asking about it.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I tell you, in spring training, we used to play the Mets the first game all the time.
Right.
Because they were down there in spring training. So Milner was a good fastball hitter. So
John Milner.
Right, yeah, so he'd hit Gibson all the time. So we're out having an adult beverage and – the more
you guys would have done that, would you?
That's all they could do.
The more that I would get him champagne, the more upset he got about Milner. Said, "I'm gonna get that son of so and so." I couldn't wait for the first game, and he came up first time and he hit him right just above the elbow. Oh, you know how bad that hurts. Milner just put the bat down and he ran down to first base, and for some reason he didn't pass out. I don't know why, but he didn't. So then the next time up, he gets a base hit, fastball, pew. Bam, he said, "That didn't work either."
Let's take another break with Mike Shannon, Ron Coomer here on the Voice of the Cardinals and the Cardinals Radio Network.
Now, back to Live with Mike, sponsored by Goodwill. Give hope, give local, give Goodwill.
Welcome back, everybody. We continue with Live with Mike, along with Mike Shannon. I'm Mike Claiborne. Ron Coomer is our guest. And we just had one of those great off-the-air sessions here. That's what this show has been made
of. Don't we all?
Yeah, exactly. And we have some of our friends here who come sit in. I think they get more of a kick out of the stories we tell off the air. And 98% of them are reasonably clean.
Yeah, we try.
And we could probably polish them up a little bit if we really needed to.
But, Mikey, you asked me, Michael, you last homestand when we were in Chicago for us to come on the show. And I was telling my friends who are here from Chicago, I'm like, "Well, Shanny, they asked me to be on a show. You guys are coming to the game. You're coming with me." I go, "This is gold here. The baseball conversation in this room is as good as it gets."
We've had some people on the show. It's unbelievable. I mean, Hall of Famers, generals.
Yeah, generals, actors.
You had a general on the show when we were at your restaurant a couple years ago.
General Moore?
Lieutenant General Hal Moore.
There you go. Yeah.
The movie, When We Were Soldiers, made about him.
I just sat there. I was like, "Well, I'm just going to sit here and enjoy my beverage. You guys go ahead and talk." He was more interesting than
one of the most fascinating people we've ever talked to.
He brought a guy. Tony used to ask him to come to spring training, so he talked to the players, you know. And then when he was finished, "Oh, by the way," he said, I brought another person here. And he pointed over there, and the guy got up, and he stood up, and he said, "My name is such and such." And he said, "I kill people for a living, and I'm the best at it in the world."
Oh, boy.
And that's how he started out. You know? So the guy came up.
There weren't a lot of talking going on.
No.
You just hope he didn't have a daughter somewhere that he ran into.
He was some kind of. But anyway, he came up to the booth, and he was sitting in the background because the general was there. And so I looked at him back there, and he's twiddling his thumb. I said, "Say, Lieutenant," I said, "when's your next deployment?" He says, "6 days, 23 minutes, and 6 miles." He had it right down. He couldn't wait.
Boy. Yeah, right. He's just itching to get back.
Not only did he say it, but he meant it.
And the other thing, he gets to sit wherever he wants.
Mm-hmm. You don't even have to ask twice.
About 180, one of those kind of guys. Uh-huh. I had a college buddy like that. Uh-huh. Boy, he could fight. He's my buddy.
You know what? It's funny you say, "Boy, he could fight." You grew up, and we were talking about you probably were the last generation of the game where you knew that a fight would break out somewhere along the way. What was the best adventure you were in that they called a brawl?
We had one where it ended up not being a fight because we had a meeting before. Remember, we were talking about playing Boston all the time. And Pedro kept knocking us down in spring training. So Tom has a meeting before, our series with Boston early in the year. And he steps out. He goes, "Hey, anybody got anything to say?" Which meant the meeting's over. He didn't really care to hear anybody else. And some of us stood up and said, "Yeah, if Pedro drills you, go get him." And I'm like, "If you go get him to break something." He's killing us. Just knocking us all down and hitting us all the time. So he hits Matt Lawton in the first inning. And Molitor and I, Molly's hitting third, and I'm hitting fourth, and Molly and I take off from the on-deck circle. I'm getting out there, and I got Pedro squared up, and I see this thing coming at me from my right side, and I'm like, that's pretty big, but I've got Pedro on my sights. I got linebacker written all over. I'm going to knock him in the next week. And it's Mo Vaughn. And he's yelling, Coom, no, no. And then he comes running in. Boom, Mo and I hit, you know. And
Maurice Vaughn.
I can't let you do that. I'm like, oh, good guy. What are you going to do? Mo's got me by the shoulder. And I'm like, that's the end of that.
Have you seen anybody as big and as strong? I knew Mo Vaughn when he was at UConn.
Great,
wonderful guy. Texas, but man. He was, I mean, just forearms like this. Yeah. And he wasn't even a weightlifter. No. He was just flat out big, man.
He was just big and strong. But that was when we had a couple of the minor leagues. But, you know, that was baseball then. You took care of, you know, if you thought somebody drilled you on purpose and it wasn't right, you go get them.
Or your pitcher handled it for you.
Right. Yeah. One or the other. If you think.
Usually the pitcher took care of it.
Yeah.
You didn't have to do that. If he wouldn't, I had to do it one time because I went to another organization.
Yeah.
And I read the riot act at my club.
Yeah.
And then I went over to the other manager and I said, hey, I'm coming for you.
Yeah.
And so he called a friend of mine in New York. The guy called me and said, what are you doing? I said, hey. They wouldn't do it. So I had to take it in my own
hands. That's right.
I'll give you an example. When we go into Ernie Banks just hit those three home runs, three-run homers against us. Reach out and hit that slider. Yeah. I says, you know, I'm tired of that old son of a gun doing that. I said, somebody's going to have to hit him. So they did. And so he didn't play. So I said, Ernie, how come you're not playing? He said, oh, you guys throw at me. He said, I'll just get the next team. I said, that's a good idea.
Yep. That was a good move on your part.
No. I mean, you know, he'd reach out there and hit those three-run homers. I said,
playing in the second row.
Third row.
Yeah.
Over the garage door and left center where
can
the ball always
came. Can you imagine how many
home runs
he'd have hit if they'd had the basket there when he was playing?
Yeah.
How about we go into Cincinnati, and Frank Robinson has 28 stitches in his left arm, okay? So in the meeting, we run over and said, he can't play. So one of our coaches said, he definitely can't play. So anyway, he comes up to pinch hit against Gibson. Gibson throws him right down the middle. He hit one of the longest home runs you've ever seen in your life because he knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
So anyway, boy, Gibson, come on. He's looking for that coach. I won't tell you who the coach was. He's still mad about that, though, isn't he? He is still mad.
You know, I knew Frank a few years ago, and we were talking about his moments against Bob Gibson. He said, yeah, ask him about that home run I hit off of.
In Cincinnati, in the old ballpark, they had a screen out over the highway, and it went over the screen, over the highway, over everything.
It went in somebody's backyard. I mean, you remember how those ballparks are? Like Wrigley Field, in the neighborhood.
It's in the neighborhood.
And that's one of the things. There's a couple of things you can't bring up to Bob without getting a reaction. You can't bring up a former manager that he played for, and you can't bring up that home run to Frank Robinson.
Okay.
Yeah. If you ever see him, if you want to have some fun, you can ask.
Just
him.
Ask about this.
I'll ask him,
manager.
And I'll say, Michael told me to ask you this question.
Just say Mike.
You'll try to figure out who it is. But I would say, be ready to duck.
I'll be ducking and moving.
So to give you an idea, Mike. Myself, Bob, Mike Matheny, who else is with Lou Brock?
And his wife. Too. She's a preacher.
So we're at an event, and we're kind of in the green room waiting on this event to start, and Mike wants to have a little fun. And so he says, well, I don't know, Mike. You know, we got some great Cardinal managers when you think about Tony and Red.
You don't have to mention his name.
And he said, and there's one other guy that you got to put in the conversation. And he brings up his name. I said, well, I don't know. Why don't we ask Bob? So Bob asked Lou's wife to leave the room.
Yeah, he said, said, Mr. Brock, would you please leave? Yeah. He said, I want to answer that question.
he peeled the paint off the wall. He was like at DEFCON 4. He was that upset. And so I'll tell you the name later.
Yeah.
But make sure when you do it, make sure you're across the street.
No, don't
be in the same room. You know, he doesn't get around as quick as he used to, but he does get around. Yeah. So I want to remind
him. Even at his age. Yeah.
He's an interesting guy and has mellowed. Mike and I always talk about he's kind of mellowed so much over the days that you wouldn't have thought he was the guy that he was. Remember that night we were out and we talked about how many guys he threw at and you looked it up?
No, it was another person involved in this, and that person asked, how many guys? He said, I didn't hit very many guys. So somebody there had the record 110, I think it was.
Oh, that's all?
Yeah.
And those are the ones he hit, yeah. Not the ones he buzzed. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But, oh, no, I didn't hit any guys. I didn't hit any, very many guys.
Just 110. Yeah.
100 plus.
There's 110 guys walking around.
You might be able to count the National League right now and not come up with that
exactly.
number.
Exactly. You're right. I was looking at that the other day. Hit batsman.
Well, how about when he had 28 complete games. Mm. 28 complete games. And he lost 9 games.
How about that?
When he had the 1.12 ERA, he lost 9 games.
Let's take another break. We're live with Mike. We're at the ballpark on the Cardinals Radio Network.
Now, back to Live with Mike, sponsored by Goodwill. Give hope, give local, give Goodwill.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here at the ballpark. Ron Coomer's our guest tonight. All right, Ron, you played the game, you broadcast the game. What are some of the things you like? What are some of the things that you would like to see maybe adjusted? Because to say you don't like, I mean, let's face it, we all have a job.
Where be
we're,
careful
we're doing
now.
Baseball. Yeah, right. and we're having fun with what we do. So what are some of the things that you wish you could go back to, or maybe some of the things you'd like to see improved, other than the pace of play, because we all agree on that one.
To me, the conversations we're having here, I think in Major League Baseball, I think there's so many rules and so much, you know, dictated by the commissioner's office and by New York, that the one thing about the game that happened years ago is everybody policed themselves. Mm-hmm. And that was a great way for baseball to go. I just think there's so many little things that are going on now that, you know, everybody dictates what happens on the field as opposed to the players. And that's something to me that I think is really missing in our game. You know, the other thing that I loved about our game is the little parts of the game where people were the guys that got to the league were actually baseball fans. You know, and the little parts of the game that you learn by playing so much baseball, even with just your buddies in the neighborhood, of base running and all the little things about the game, that if a team does that now, which I think the Cubs are pretty good at, they win. All these little things get done right and you win. If you don't do all these little things right, you're just an average team. And I look at that as one of the things that you like and dislike. The other thing that I really like about our game is the athletes nowadays are just absolutely incredible. I mean, you see the big power arms that come out of the bullpen. I mean, the game has never been played by better players. I mean, they're bigger, stronger, faster, and, you know, the guys are hitting balls 8 miles and they're clean and everything. You know, it's just a fun, to me, outside of the pace of the game, it's a fun game to watch because the athletes nowadays are just so good.
But, you know, I think you see the Cubs every day. And one of the things that I've come to appreciate about them are three things. They busted coming out of batter's box. I don't care whether it's a line drive. They are still running hard until somebody catches it. They play hard no matter what the score is. They have fun as well. But they do the little things. Joe Maddon has killed the Cardinals over the years with the squeeze play.
Yep.
Running from first to third.
Even the safety.
The safety, yeah,
the
safety squeeze.
Yeah, safety squeeze.
It's the safety, not the suicide squeeze. The safety squeeze. Yeah, yeah.
But it's the little things about the game.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's been so many times Mike and John have sat up here and you can smell it. Like he said, you can smell it coming.
You know it's coming.
But it's the little things about the game is what I think makes baseball fun to watch. And I think what separates the Cubs from a lot of other teams is because they do all of those things. How many times do you see a guy that's dogging it and he takes a hard left turn before the ball's thrown to the first baseman? Those things seem to be glaring, but they're almost acceptable compared to what you guys do. Mm-hmm. You and I were talking about a play. I saw Kyle Schwarber bust out of the box the other day, and it was a really close play. Now, this is a guy who was considered just a guy, former catcher, but the hustle is something that stands out. I don't see enough teams doing it.
No, but I think that's a Joe Maddon thing. There's no doubt. Joe is a guy that what he expects the game to be played a certain way, and he doesn't accept anything else. But he also does it in a fun way to make sure guys get rewarded for playing the game the right way. And in his own way, he lets them know when they don't. But to be honest, now with the Cubs, it doesn't even have to get to Joe Madden. You got to pass Anthony Rizzo before.
Yeah.
If you're not going
to
run the ball out, you
got to
pass Jason Hayward.
Yeah.
You got to pass all these guys that have got
Zobrist.
A worst Zobrist.
Yeah.
You got to pass guys with a World Series ring or two or three and go, guess what, boys? We don't play the game that way. If you don't want to play our way, sit at the end of the bench because you're out. And it doesn't even have to get to Joe because he's got the right guys now that really, really
you
take care of
it. You said earlier, you police yourselves.
Yeah, there you go. And this Cubs team can do that now.
Character, a word we don't use enough in the game. How important is that? Would you rather have a guy with character who's going to give you everything you need, or would you like to have the prima donna who's going to hit you 40 home runs, but you know you're going to have issues along the way?
Well, when you get down to playing, as you guys have played many times in October and November, real simple. You want the guys that are going to grind the game out and play the game the right way because the games are so tough to win with the great pitching at that time of the year. You've got to get guys that are going to play the game the right way. That's the teams that win in October and November. You guys won for years. We watched. Same thing with the Cubs in 16.
And the Giants were the same way.
Giants.
They never won.
Yeah, Boch's teams. Did you see one guy not grind the game? They were tough to play.
They just didn't know how to play. There's one guy out there that knew how to play, and that was a third baseman, okay? And I asked him one day, I said, hey, where'd you learn how to play? And he kind of looked at me funny. I said, no, where'd you learn? He said, oh, I know what you mean. He said, at USC.
Jimmy Ray Hart.
Yeah, there you go.
No, it wasn't Jimmy Ray.
Oh, Jim Davenport.
Jimmy Davenport. Yeah. That's exactly who it was. For the Dodgers all those years where they played, pitching and defense.
But, there's a handful of organizations like that. We talk about the Dodgers and the Giants, the Cardinals. Cubs have made a way. Mm-hmm. Baltimore Orioles were a team that were like that until the ownership that they have have kind of diluted things. There's probably eight teams in the game that when you look at them, they do things what we would deem the right way.
Right.
Maybe eight. It may not even be that many.
And, you count them the people that win every year.
Yeah. And teams that fundamentally don't beat themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see teams that just fundamentally just don't get it.
Right.
And I see with, teams that they do little things that beat the other team. And you can name those on one hand.
Well, look at our series in Chicago, the five-game series. The team, other than the one blowout game, the teams that made the plays and did all those little things right won those games. And the Cardinals could have won every game. They made a couple mistakes one game. The Cubs won the ball game. The Cubs made a couple mistakes in one game. The Cardinals won the game. Real simple.
You mentioned Joe Madden, and I'm going to tell you how he – you talk about how he rewards players. He had Tommy La Stella come out and pitch. Now, he'd already done it once that week.
Yeah.
And he pitched, and he was trying to just – keep the flood walls from breaking down.
Right.
But he rewarded them with a start the next game.
Yeah,
It's the little things that I think managers appreciate to say, hey, look, I put this guy in a really awkward situation, but I'm going to find a way to put him in a situation where he could be successful.
I think, Shannon, you're friends with Madden also, and Sir Michael. The one thing I'll say about Joe Madden that I didn't know playing against his clubs in Anaheim when he was Socia's bench coach or playing against Tampa or broadcasting against him is the awareness that he has of what's going on around him.
Yeah.
You don't know until you're around somebody close.
Yeah.
He may be the most aware guy that you can be around.
Yeah.
And he just has a great feel for what's going on in his clubhouse and his team. And when you have that kind of awareness, you have an opportunity to be a really good leader, whether it's business or whether it's a manager. And he's got it.
Something he said was very pertinent that you don't hear very much anymore. He said, they asked him about managing. He said, no, I don't manage the players. He said, my coaches do. I manage my coaches.
Yeah.
And he's right. And the players know that. Mm-hmm. And so what do they do? They manage themselves.
That's right.
Yeah. And all because of him.
Let's take another break. We'll come back. Our final segment with Ron Coomer here on the Cardinals Radio Network.
Now, back to Live with Mike, sponsored by Goodwill. Give hope, give local, give Goodwill.
Welcome back, everybody. Our final segment with Ron Coomer. All right, you and I have been friends for a few years. Mm-hmm. You know Mike, and we love having you in town. And you win a World Series. And I'm going to ask you this question. I don't know if I've ever asked you this question. You played a long time, yep. Never won a World Series.
Right.
What was it like the night you won?
Mm.
What was it like for you, Mike, the day you won the World Series? I mean, this is something that, you know, you walk into it at a pretty young age. What was it like for both you guys when you realized, hey, I just think we won the World Series?
You want to go or you want me to go?
Go ahead.
For me, I remember a few things about going into Game 7 of the World Series, calling the game with Pat Hughes. I remember about 5 minutes before the game, our executive director, Mitch Rosen, in Chicago. So we're, you know, it's pretty tense, right? It's mm-hmm. Game 7. And he just gives us a hug, and I'm like, holy cow, he's never given us a hug ever. He's nervous as hell. He's more nervous than we are. So I remember going into that game and just being really prepared for the broadcast, but just understanding for Chicago, as a kid growing up, the magnitude of that game for the Cub fans, right? I mean, you guys had won a bunch of World Series. You'd won it. In Chicago, we hadn't won one. So I just remember feeling that going into the broadcast. And then I remember the final call and just making sure I pushed the microphone out of my face so I didn't step on Pat's call, because it had never been said that the Cubs have won a World Series, and I didn't want to screw that up and have that something wrong with that. But I just remember stepping out of the booth right after the ball game for a second to say hi to a couple people with the Cubs, and then coming right back in Cleveland. And I just remember standing there looking out into the field, in a field full of, you know, we're in Cleveland and full of Cubs and fans and everything else. And I just thought, we just won the World Series.
We just
won the World Series in Chicago. And I kept saying it. I bet I said it on the air 10 times. I couldn't stop saying it. I'm like, folks, the Cubs are World Series champions.
You were trying to convince yourself.
I couldn't believe it. I grew up sitting in them seats and played in that uniform.
You know, and here it wasn't that big a deal because we had done it before.
Right.
But I'll give you some example.
Well, what about in 64 when you were part of that
team?
Well,
yeah, I know that. But I'll give you a better example. It's when McGuire's going for the home runs record, okay? And so some writers came up and asked me, well, what are you going to say, and are you nervous? I said, what do you mean nervous? I said, I was nervous when I was facing Koufax or Drysdale. I said, I'm not nervous about this stuff. Are you kidding? Well, what are you going to say? I said, I have no idea what I'm going to say. But, you know, it was that big a deal, okay?
Yeah.
Well, I had been through it before with Maris because he was a friend of mine, so forth and so on. So, I mean, but I'm going to tell you something. On Friday, the last weekend of the season, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, that's all the games were left. He wasn't even leading the National League in home runs. Sosa was.
Right, that's right.
Sosa had one more home run than he did, okay? Mm-hmm. He had 5 home runs in the 3 games with Montreal.
Yeah.
Now, I want to tell you something. When you have to do it, and you do it like he did, like Maris did the same thing the last day of the season, last at bat, he hits 61, okay?
Yeah.
But, you know, that's... Let me tell you, that takes not only skill, but it takes intestinal fire. It takes it takes character.
Yeah, the mental toughness,
things,
and
concentration.
You know. But can you imagine 5 home runs in the 3 games and hit 70 home runs?
Now let me ask you this: of the pitches that Max saw that were hittable in that series, might have been 7 or 8, and he had 5 of them into the seats. We didn't pitch to him ever. We never pitched him.
You're right.
Well, but you know, I ask him because I knew what Maris went through. He talked to me about it. So I told Big Mac, I said, hey, in the All-Star break, I want to interview you. He said, okay. So I asked him. We were in Cincinnati in that room they have there. It's a theater room, okay?
Yeah.
That's where I did the interview. And I said, when you get to 50 home runs, I said, it's 55, you know, so far to get close. I said, they're not going to pitch to you. He said, oh, yeah, they're going to pitch to me. When he told me that, I couldn't, because of what Maris had told me. Maris, the only strike that Maris hit out of his last 10 or 11 were the last one. Tracy Stallard threw him a strike. The other ones were all out of the strike zone, and they were all big home runs, too. 1-0, 2-1, something like that. And he didn't have Mantle behind him at
yeah,
the time.
Yeah, Mantle was hurt already. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yep.
So it was interesting to hear him, how it started and why he did it. And then also he couldn't believe that nobody had broken the record.
Yeah.
But Big Mac knew he could do it because he had done it the year before.
Yeah.
With that many games, okay, there was two seasons, but he still had done it, you know, in the 161 games or 62 games. So it was an interesting, it was really interesting for me because
You'd seen both. Yeah,
he's seen a lot.
Oh, I know that. That's why when you asked me to be on the show, I go, I'm a yes. I'm just a yes to be here.
You know, going back to the whole Chicago thing, and I know people here probably. We're rooting for you guys because we one of the great things about this business, all the broadcasters know each other, and 98% of them get along. And hey, we don't do it. Good luck to you guys. It's not like we're sticking voodoo pins and you say, "Well, I hope you guys follow."
Hold
your
on
face.
A second now.
but you know, as you said, as you said, you absorb something for your city, your community, the people who.
No, that's a historic moment.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
What they were doing, and you set the scene forever and ever. Okay, because they're gonna, and I know that I've never heard it, but I guarantee you that's been played time after after time after time. Okay, you know there've been great calls. You know, this Cubs win the pennant, the Cubs win the pennant, or so. You know, Harry Carey, the Cardinals win the pennant. You know, in '64, and said it over and over and over. But those things, what you said, you realized it, okay? And you realized that this was, what, 100 and some years? 108 years it had never happened. Yep. So, I mean, that was unbelievable. You know, it was like the cow knocking that lantern over. It was bigger than that. You know, I had
this
made
was
the
a positive for exactly. us.
Yeah. Our first plus.
I used to make the comment, I said that if Jesus Christ came back on earth, okay, and he was going to speak at the tower up there, and the Cub manager just won the World Series, who'd have the biggest crowd?
Hold on, no lightning bolts. Yeah.
But it's the truth, you know? I mean, that's what kind of a magic moment it was for you guys.
You know, I think Jesus would probably have the bigger crowd because they might not recognize Joe if he's not in uniform. that might be the reason. Other than that, it might, as Tony La Russa would say, tie for first. Yeah. I think is how you look at that.
Well, that's like, you know, if it wasn't him, he was among them.
Yes, exactly.
There you go.
So, for you, you've done a lot. We haven't even talked about your restaurant. So let's talk a little bit about that because this is our last segment. So we got one more trip there.
Yeah.
So will it be ready to roll?
Oh, we're ready. We're rolling right now. Yeah. So with some friends of mine. So when I moved out of the inner city of Chicago, I moved out to Lockport, which is
now you grew up in the same neighborhood with who?
Jim Hickey, our pitching coach. Jimmy and I grew up. His brother played on our Little League team. But I grew up right by Midway Airport, right in the south side of the city. And then we moved out to the southwest.
I love that airport,
suburbs.
By the way.
It's great. It's much easier
yes,
to get in and out of.
Yes, it is.
I understand. But when we moved out to the south suburbs, I really stayed connected with a lot of my high school teammates and a lot of people in town. And that high school, you know, I've done a lot at the high school through the years, and I just got really good friends there. So my buddies, two springs ago, called me and said, one of the restaurants in town is available. What do you think? And, you know, we started talking on it, looking at some numbers. I'm like, you know, it's a great thing to do in your town because it brings a lot of people together, as you guys know. It's a fun thing. You know, we're all businessmen. So, you know what? I got one of my business partners here who lives in St. Louis, and we just love doing it. It's a fun thing. We're right next to the high school, so we can do a lot for the high school, a lot of kids. And,
as long as the students don't come over and order a cold one.
They won't.
Okay.
They'll get one of these. Yeah.
But you're correct. It's what you do for other people. Like I used to tell to my people, I say, you know, my name's on the building.
That's right.
I said, but it's your place.
Yeah.
It's your. And how many people are making their living off of that? You know?
That's right. And
hundreds of them.
The great thing we get to do with what we do for a living, all of us, is do some nice things for some other people in our towns where we grew up. And that's one of the things. It gets me back in Lockport in our hometown, and I like it. I really have fun with it. My friends, we all come by. I get to meet them. We got a spot to meet now, and it's really good. But thanks,
Where is it?
It's in Lockport, Illinois. We're about 35 minutes southwest of U.S. Cellular, the new right. Sox ballpark.
And so if I'm going to come hang out with you as long as you get me home.
We'll get you home. Yeah. One of my buddies that hangs out is the police chief, so we're good.
Okay, good.
I'm in.
I'm going to come hang out with you.
Problem.
Yeah. That's all I needed to hear. Because we come in there one more time. Yeah. Is it the last
three games?
Last three
season.
Games. Yeah. So
I'll tell you a funny story about that. You know, I went out. I drove out to a buddy of mine's place in Phoenix, you know, I said, well, I'm driving tonight, so I can only have, you know, such and such. He said, no, you have one drink here, just a sip, he said. And I said, really? Yeah. I said, well, good. I said, can you get me home tonight? Yeah. I said, bring it on, man. Yeah, I said, you're taking me home. I don't have to drive.
Yeah. All right, so what's the name of it again?
Coombs Corner is the name of our restaurant in the south suburbs of Chicago in Lockport, southwest side. And we're kind of a higher-end sports bar. We got a lot of TVs and that, but we hired a great chef, and our food is good. You know me. I'm going to eat good food now.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why I'm going
to hang out
with you.
We travel around the country. We're going to have some good food now.
Absolutely.
That's for sure.
There you go.
And we might have a few adult beverages in there. So
at least one.
Maybe one or two. But we're going to have good food, and we have a good time, and we really like our music, too. So that's the other thing.
All right. I might come in a day early for that
there
one,
you
man,
go.
Just to hang out. Ron Coomer, we're out of time, man. You know what? You're one of our favorite people, not because you're a Cub broadcaster, but because you're one of the good guys, and we always thank you and appreciate you.
Philosophy. You got
you just show up looking to have a good time like we do, man.
Hey, you know, our game, we've been all so fortunate. And then, you know, we do what we do. And, you know, Cubs-Cardinals is a great rivalry. Mm. That doesn't mean we have to be rivals in a booth. Mm. We've all got along so well for so long.
Exactly.
We're friends, and that's the way it should be. So, you know, I just appreciate you guys having me on your show whenever we come in. And it's always great to hear Shanny's story. I mean, it's legendary, right?
Just wait till we get off the air. You can hear the real good stories.
It's great. But thank you, guys. Yep, Michael, thank you. Yep.
All right. Ron Coomer, our guest. We'll see you. You working tomorrow, or are you one of those guys that can take the day off?
You know,
I've only been
on radio for 15 years.
Yeah, you got to be there.
31. I'll be in the booth tomorrow.
All right, I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. For Mike Shannon, I'm Mike Claiborne. We'll be with you tomorrow. You and I tomorrow.
That's correct.
John is on assignment
tomorrow. Get your rest.
Yeah.
Well,
get home early now.
You know what I've learned?
At least
from
two.
I've learned for the best when it comes to pace. So I'll be okay tomorrow. So we'll have a game for
you
tomorrow.
Be here in time. We're already here. Aren't
we're here. Yeah. That doesn't mean we have to go that far.
Exactly.
That's one of the great things about this booth. And so when you guys get your booth expanded, make sure you take notes of how it's supposed to be.
You think I didn't already?
He's Ron Coomer. He's Mike Shannon. I'm Mike Claiborne. We thank you for listening to another edition of Live with Mike on the Cardinals Radio Network.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.